So there you go, that was the poetry film. Was that one from this year's competition or a couple of years? I saw that one, yeah. Okay, we're going to do the open mic, and first up to the open mic is Sue Cosgrave.
I read your snippet from an essay I wrote a few years ago back for the Corporate Review, and it's my own kind of personal search for a poet called Enheduanna, who lived 4,000 years ago in the city of Ur in southern Iraq. And she's known for being the first poet ever to put her name down to poem, and she was a woman. So it's kind of a feminist essay. So I'll start from where I left off. The history of Iraq is filled with women who risked all for the common good. During the 1920 uprising against the British rule, women of all backgrounds rode into battle, reciting poetry to encourage resistance. These poems continued to live in the collective memory of the people and were resurrected when a new wave of British troops invaded Iraq in 2003. Omi Nizar, the most revered of these poets, called for female emancipation at a time when this notion was barely taking off in the West. Her daughter, Nazif al-Malaika, the foremost poet and critic of her time, introduced free verse poetry to the Arabic language. Malaika's 1953 Women Between Passivity and Positive Morality remains a feminist classic. In the early half of the 20th century, Iraqi women took to higher education in droves, joining political parties and clandestine resistance cells that transcended the barrier of religion and language. They took an active part in the call for democratic reforms. Unsurprisingly, the first woman publisher in the Middle East emerged in Iraq in 1923, as did the first female cabinet minister in 1959. Even the abaya, this drab black cloth that made women indistinguishable from each other, became a potent weapon in women's fight for a better future. I remember Ibrahim, one of my father's communist friends, telling me of his part in the historic 1948 uprising, a month-long protest and act of civil disobedience against the Anglo-Iraqi Treaty. One bitter cold January day, he joined the front lines for demonstration beneath the mounted statue of General Maud. A contingent of British soldiers stood behind imposing gates in the British ambassador's residence. A small number of Iraqi troops were stationed on the outside perimeter where they faced the angry demonstrators. The residence, a splendid 19th century mansion in Khat, one of Baghdad's poorest neighborhoods. The narrow alleyways thronged with people from all walks of life. Men and women, young and old, jostled shoulder to shoulder in the confined space. They were demanding the downfall of the occupation and taunting the British troops behind the fence. As the crowd grew in size, troops were given the orders to shoot. Reluctant Iraqi soldiers took aim. In that confined space, the protesters had nowhere to flee. And then, out of nowhere, a wall of poetry reciting covered women pushed through the crowd and stood between the guns and the protesters. The soldiers were paralyzed. They could not shoot. Anonymous in their black shrouds, any one of these women could have been a sister or a mother. In my fancy, I like to imagine that Enheduanna, the rebel poet, gave a blessing to the scene. I see her smiling wryly to herself as the oppressive abaya was exploited to score a point against the garment. In my teenage years, in spite of being surrounded by writers, poets, and artists, many of whom were women, I grew up knowing nothing of Enheduanna. Her name was never mentioned. Yet in the 1970s was a time of rapid change. Women outnumbered men in higher education. I regarded this change as a landmark in history, as a natural progression of things. Women were always oppressed, the narrative went. It was only now I was told that women were coming to the fore. I was also told that women needed men to grant them the equality they pined for, that the changes I witnessed were thanks to men, such as the poets Al-Zahawi and Musavi, who championed female emancipation during the first half of the century. Since poetry was a dominant genre in Iraq, their voices did lend the cause much needed support at a time when civil liberties of all Iraqis were oppressed. Yet I grew up resenting this paternalism. In your face, acts of rebellion became my hallmark, each such act rebounding on me like a boomerang. At age 10, a sister at the Mar Yusuf Convent School told the girls in my class that God had created Eve from Adam's rib. Yeah. It was preordained that girls should give way to boys no matters. The boys sniggered, the girls took it on the chin. I stood up and called the sister a liar, then rounded on the nearest boy, kicking him on the shins when he poked me in the ribs. Afterwards, I sat for what seemed like hours outside the principal's office, nursing my swollen palms, till my parents were summoned. I was promptly taken out of the school and placed in another with a less religious ethos. Thank you.
Thanks, Sue. Give me your main eagle, please. Is it me?
Right.
Oh, Mary. Terrible handwriting.
I know. Rash at 13. I stole the razor left carelessly on the sink. Pressed its power grip to my palm. Blushed at the blade, no buttermilk. Then started scraping at flaky skin. Dealing death to every hair. My skin was only holes, vases robbed of flowers. Oh, they would have been legs worthy of Lolita, ornate and white and not too tight. The cows in the fields would have admired me, and the dogs in the street. Legs, me, we would have been perfect, but for the blood. The pock marks made me paltry, worse than mature. So kneeling, on the most delicate and most damaged part, I prayed that for Christmas, I get my hairy ones back.
Thanks, Betty. Can we have Joe Sweeney, please?
Hello, everyone. Happy Christmas.
No!
Well, I'm glad that it's still 2016, because 100 years ago, James and Patrick Sweeney, my great uncles, went into the GPO with Mr. Pierce, and they engaged in certain revelries, as we all know, and I wanted to, before the year was out, risk my life too by singing a song here. It's a song you know. It was written in 1916, I think, around that time. It's called The Bold Fenian Men. I'm not going to play this, it's just to give you the note. I have cleared many a house with this tune. Twas down by the glen side, I met an old woman a plucking young nettles, nor saw I was coming. I listened a while to the song she was humming. Glory, oh, glory, oh, to the bold Fenian. 16 long years since I saw the moon beaming on brave manly forms, and their eyes were hearts gleaming. I see them all now, sure in all my daydreaming. Glory, oh, glory, oh, to the bold Fenian men. Some died by the hillside, some died with a stranger. Wise men have judged that their cause was a failure. They fought for old Ireland and never feared of danger. Glory, oh, glory, oh, to the bold Fenian. I passed on my way, thanks to God that I met her. Be life long or short, sure I'll never forget her. There may have been brave men, but they'll never be better. Glory, oh, glory, oh, to the bold Fenian men.
This is a rather strange piece to follow. It's based on a reality TV program. It's called, it's dealing with a couple called Goforts. So I thought, well, how strange. So one thinks of, anyway, it's called Carpe Diem. Go forth and multiply was the biblical pronouncement. The Goforts have obliged, not by increasing progeny, but by augmenting their wealth and luxury. Robin and Nuri Goforth were happy to appear on the TV show Britain's Flashiest Families. Robin, now a millionaire, says he's a self-made man. Nuri boasts that she too found life tough. They've both worked hard and wish to slash the cash.
I don't want to be the richest woman in the graveyard, she tells us from the screen. Money can't buy you everything. That's why I rely on credit cards. My husband's when my own run out. Her adoring hobby is happy to oblige. She mentions he's a digger, but she is one as well, with Christian Louboutin shoes and handbags by Chanel. Across the screen, she struts her stuff. Cosmetic procedures are itemized with glee. Derma rollers, LED lamps, ways to trim and tone her form. Liposucked and streamlined, sporting the perfect tan. Hair to die for, dyed already to a honey-tinted sheen. She's the picture of perfection, a designer's wildest dream. When a yacht was bought by Robin, it left Nelly rather niffed. However, when she stepped on board, she quickly made the switch, suggesting even calling it the brand new Botox bitch. Awed by her careless confidence, she never regrets a thing. A voice inside my skull said, she's vulgar and dotes on bling. My carping changed when she declared coffins were on her list. I saw she had a serious side and could not be dismissed. The undertaker marveled as she tried out some for Smiles. A casket, satin-lined and black, was the first to catch her eye. Climbing in with special care, she stretched out, showing no dread, folded her arms and closed her eyes as if she were really dead. Then she went on, without a blink, to try out several more. A Perspex box in vivid pink was the one that she adored. Its cover was transparent, so her corpse would be on view. No doubt she'd leave instructions to make it good as new. You really couldn't blame her for showing it off with flair. Too soon it would be buried, and none of us would care. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Owen O'Crowley.
Rarick on Pat's name. Eglantine Asylum. The big house. The great building. The red brick. Pat's name dormitory. Three stories down. I was found in the roll of cement sepulchre. And a man laying in a cement courtyard in the dark. Sean McBride, Chief of Staff, IRA, Nobel Peace Prize winner, Lenin Peace Prize winner. The Precon War, the Baltimore, the Fastener, the Grey Roots, awaiting the alien. Kasuda Shostakovich, school frequently in the morning again, like Shostakovich. A toothbrush in the briefcase. Iganis came to my chain lifted, no honor here, not knowing when he'd be lifted, day or night. On guard the car. The guard the car. On Dr. Wilson, the noble doctor. On Free Clover, the dentist. On Clown the Cater, the family together. Che Larstig and Che Ma, 6 days inside to teach him a lesson. On Walking Wounded, the wasted years. Ard Mera, Thomas and Curtin. Ard Mera, Caleb McSween, D.X. Merrillat, Owen Bard, Oscar Green, Fionn Bratt, Fionn Lash, King Street Station, RUC, RAC, Farfait Bloom, Men Under Pressure, Farfait Question, Mending Question, Priscilla Doctor, like Frederick Locker, Liam Shears, he jumped, impaled on the railings, all that remains on the hoarding, CYN, Cheney.
Thank you. Gunnar Miller. Can we have Matthew Sweeney, please?
Two tiny French poems. Nowhere man. Halfway up the steep hill, I notice a bald-headed young guy standing on the roof of a yellow Morris Minor, mini Minor, sorry, singing John Lennon's Nowhere Man. His accent added a je ne sais quoi to the lyrics. I found myself applauding before he finished, then racing up to give him a 10 euro note and asking him to repeat the act or sing another song, which he seemed to appreciate greatly, flashing me a smile I wish I'd captured on my stupid phone, which was on strike. He swayed on the roof and launched into my favorite Beatles song, In My Life, making me sit down on the curb and cry. How these Frenchmen knew how to pick the best Beatles songs, always Lennon's, and sing them so well in that accent was as bewildering to me as their grammar. Anyway, I wanted to hop up on the roof and hug him. He bowed at my reaction, then jumped down and disappeared. Isle song. The four candles took a while to burn down, but they did, leaving the boy's corpse in the dark, apart from a blue light filched from the hospital that wouldn't have lit a weasel's way home. The boy's father was on top of the water tower with a whiskey bottle. His mother was a kilometer out into the Mediterranean under the moon and was finally thinking of turning back. Only the boy's sister was in the house with him, and she was sleepwalking up the steep stairs to stand at his feet and shout out in her sleep the old song he'd loved so much about the owls.
Thank you. Give it up more color, please.
Thank you very much. This time 5 years ago, I was in California, and what reminded me about this poem was I had the trucks outside putting up the Christmas lights. We all heard them backing up and stuff like that. The whole street is blocked off. And I was in staying in Napa Valley, and I was going out to dinner with my cousins in Oakland, and they were putting up a Christmas tree. But the Christmas tree was made of shopping carts. I kid you not. It's just shopping carts piled high. And they were making a Christmas tree and they were putting lights and stuff in it, and I couldn't believe it. It was actually in a shopping mall. So and they were building a Christmas tree of shopping carts. That was gigantic. The height of this building on higher. So here's a poem that I woke up the following morning. This poem was there fully hatched, as I say. And it's called Shopping Season. Last night in Auckland, they were putting up the Christmas tree, all made of shopping carts piled high. Homage to the new god, shopping. Adorned with stores where people shopped and prayed, like my mother did at the Stations of the Cross. Gap and Abercrombie, from the sweatshops in New Delhi, built this church, like Inca gold built ours. The alien tourists will marvel at this temple with the shopping cart Christmas tree.
Thank you. Can we have Seamus Harrington, please?
Trev. We before last, we were in Rotterdam, stayed in a cruise liner, very calm, tied up the whole thing, SS Rotterdam. And this is another hotel ship. Tall ship in the port of Gothenburg, and she's telling her story in this. The Viking. She'd have no truck with mock tall ships, bulimic tanks of liquid gold. I don't propose to bend a knee, and never would unstep a mast to suit that bridge that hems us in to harbour years of gangway life. We'll stay secured and keep each guest their posh hotel, my tumble home. My figurehead will often cast a jaundiced eye on Lego ships with cargoes boxed in vivid stacks, bad mannered ribs and soap dish boats that skim across our basin berth, and towering hulks decked out in glass where bubbling pools of idle rich old landsmen soak their golden hinds. Her secret wish has always been return again to naval days, the trill and ring of ordered steps, a manifest of fresh cadets to line the Ard's parade of sail. Those forecastle heirs of every ilk, our master's voice across the poop and gimbaled hours away offshore. The soundless mit and bosun's pet, his musing gaze as flying fish play and break about my lee cat head. In distant roads, the windless sun, transcendent moon, or ebb and flow. We'd love to seek a further voyage, secluded shores I've yet to trace, like sights within the piper's song. And yes, I miss this canvas press, feel foot ropes dance where top men tread. At harbour's mouth, a lash of salt to rinse my plunging plimsoll line. A creaking sheen, the quiet routine, ice broken clear in furrowed drills, the scything wind at each crow's nest, a field of wheat discharged at last.
Thank you. Thank you. I give you up Patricia Walsh, please.
Working against type is this month's flavour. Working against industry a close second. Arising from bed for no man calling heavy. Unemployable by design, curtailing respect. Hiding behind big canopies, trees abounding. Without country, a citizen of waking hours. No hunger in this town, a private stomach. Awakens the plebs into fighting the other day. Easily be a fascist by not congregating to type. Breaking ranks with the respectable, a dumb thing. Refusing payment where we're such as a Jew. Battling elements of winter in a cool sign. Spitting and swallowing in equal measure. Too drunk to object, so much the better. Awaken to pursue irrelevant matters. Searching off some primordial pain. Repeated callings come to naught. Having a job and career redeems. Big three. In far off counties where all is hidden. Liberated from constant wheel of primordials. Nothing sees like rebellion, however brief. A night in dingy armour promises the world. Serving on purpose to pick at one's virtue. Set the matters of slipshod romance as regard. Thank you.
Thanks, Patricia. Oh. Can we have Bernadette Gallagher, please?
Animal Republic. All politics is failure. Tell that to your cat. She will look at you with contempt. Cats kill to survive. They find shelter in a ditch or under your roof. You too could kill. Rabbits? We poisoned those with myxomatosis. A slow death to control the number. We left the cave and settled down to farm. Religion to keep us in check. Now, we don't know when to kneel. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernadette. Can we have Charles Clark, please?
Before Daryl, because his for the wolf. And in case you don't know, a droshky is a four-wheeled, low-slung, horse-drawn carriage. Before the invention of nylon stockings, the wolf was more interested in survival. You could see him in the forests of Transylvania, but a pastley, or a droshky, was vital. The wolf runs faster when he is hungry, but he did not despair, since droshkies can be unreliable. When he foregathered with kindred spirits, it was better to keep moving. The wolf's howl is also unnerving to the inexperienced. The invention of a combustion engine was bad news for the wolf, or so it seems. Yet the new technology, the fast car, introduced the wolf to sex and money and the modern wolfish. And the other one is vaguely Christmassy in its implications. It's called Christmas Still. It is good studio practice to pose the Indian on the water tower with bow and arrow against a blue desert sky, skeletal tree and ranch site, a Christmas card from the west, a Manichaean message of good and evil from the backlight.
Thanks, Charles. Can we have Maria Wood? I know, yeah. It didn't work.
This is called Replacement, and the mention of Caesar. I did have it first as No Julius Caesar. People didn't understand that the first cesarean section baby was Julius Caesar, apparently. So I took out Julius.
Well, they'll hear you down the back then.
They don't want to hear you.
They do. They wouldn't be here if they didn't.
We don't want Caesar.
It's called Replacement. No Caesar baby this, true delight. It's a girl. 'Twill never replace the other that died eve of 1955. No copper-haired, roundy face, but long, scrawny, mouse-coloured. Never the same chubby cuddlesome, more intent, cranky like a weasel. Comparing? Oh no, not at all, but cherished oh so closely, never ushered far from mother's wing.
That's real. Can we have Dor Harding, please?
I think you only got one thing wrong tonight, Brad.
Yes.
Adam, you said something about him being a farmer corkman, it's not just a thing.
There you
go. Mobile phones are a new thing. When we were young fellas, there was such a thing as the phone box, the local phone box, when people went out and made a phone call because they didn't have phones in their houses, or a lot of people didn't. And the local phone box in my area was my little private bank. This is called Press Button B. Those calls must have been frantic from the public telephone box. The final penny rammed into the slot, jammed against the previous coin. Was the wife on her last legs? Had the chimney caught fire? Was this his precious mistress time? The receiver would be banged down, door saved only by the large leather hinge. It was then we made our ambush, a lookout round the corner, another by the butchers. My job was simple, get in fast, jimmy out the top coin, pull the paper down the chute, and then that beautiful sound, like no other, of pennies pigging, clattering into the cup. I paid off the sentries, a penny each, if they were lucky, and skedaddled to General Lake's for chocolate and lemonade, and the same again for another week at least. Where did those frustrated fallen men go? They had their lives to live, and we had ours. Thanks.
Thanks, Doc. Our last poet tonight, he started writing his five-word poem at the beginning, and we hope he's finally finished it. Will you please welcome Philip Scott?
I was going to read that out. So this is called Gnomon, and it's ahead of a sundial, and it's... I was walking through UCC Park one day and I just saw the sundial. It was a foggy morning. And I just saw the sundial was casting a long shadow across the greenery and decided to write a poem about it. No man. Pull up the sundial, selects a better hour than the no man. It dampens the green in the juniper. The cold grey that the dampest made the sun colder. He dawns longer shadows among the lighter morning colours. No man awakens for anything less than something so beautiful. But man is asleep and misses the densities. Instead stares at the false ones, detailed in little boxes, changing colours with little input. Thank you.
Thanks for that.